WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are celebrating in the greatest way 31 years of doing this. It was 31 years ago, December the 13th, 1991, that I walked into WITH with the great Kenny Albert saying, "Nestor, I'm going to do a show. Do you want to co-host it?" And all these years later, we're going to be celebrating over at Costas on Thursday with our friends from the Maryland Lottery. We give away the holiday cash drop tickets. These are the new ones. I still have a handful of the Ravens ones to give away. Apparently, there's a whole bunch of holiday parties over at Costas celebrating as well. We have Gina Shock from the Go-Go's, my pal John Allen, some other great friends, including the band Milkshake will be joining us. All of it brought to you by our friends at Goodwill Industries. So Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from them, as well as our friends at Window Nation. You buy two, you get two free. 866-90-NATION is the way to get them, and I did it in summer. 0% financing. It's even a better deal than the deal that I got. So here's the deal. For those of you watching out on the podcast, I am wearing my Skipjacks, and this isn't a real one. This was sort of a pasty falling apart when my real one was the Steve Seftel 14 Rotor in the red that I mailed to him by surprise last year for Christmas for him and his family to enjoy because I've been wearing it for 20 years. And Trotsky and I got together about a month ago to hear how his retirement's going, and he said, "Dude, give me your email address. Like, I got some things. I found some things when I was cleaning my dad out." So this thing arrives in the mail. I'm gonna hold the address down, but it says B Trots on it, and I knew, well, there's gonna be something good in this thing. So inside of this thing, I open it up, and there is Trotsky's first team, the 91-92 Skippies, on ice there in the good looking whites. Look at that Sean Simpson, how good looking he was back then. So I just saw Simmer up in Ottawa at a Pearl Jam show a couple months ago. And then I get the I get some of these programs from my dude Trotsky, and lo and behold, score program from October the 19th and the 23rd against the great Maine Mariners. I assure you, I covered these games for the Baltimore Evening Sun as the beat writer. And this picture, this good-looking prospect, number 25, Tim Taylor, number one in your scorecard, of course, was on this, and someone jumped in, and it was Josh Rimmer, Jeff Rimmer's son, who said, "I have Tim Taylor's number." And I said, "I should track down every Robin Bawa, every Tyler Larder, every Chris Felix, and try to get them all on. But I'm going to start with number 25, the captain who went on to win two Stanley Cups." And they said great things didn't come from the Baltimore Skipjacks. They were wrong. He is now running pro personnel for the St. Louis Blues. I did not know this. I am completely ignorant. Tim, how have you been, dude? You've had a good life, young man, I would say.
Yeah, well, you know what? I built a foundation, a hockey foundation, at a young age in Baltimore. And I spent 4 years there in the minors, and it really collaborated how I turned out to be as a player. I got to learn to play defense. I knew it from Barry Trotz, especially what team play and defensive hockey is all about. And I was able to have a good NHL career and be able to play 15 years in NHL and play on two very good teams and win a Stanley Cup in 1997, Detroit Red Wings, and then obviously 2004 with Tampa Bay Lightning. And, you know, now my name got added again for a third time now with management with the St. Louis Blues. So, yes, hockey's been a real joy for me, and really it's enlightened my life, and it's who I am. So I appreciate everything hockey has given me.
Well, let's start at the beginning here. We're the same age, you and me. And, you know, I came at it honest. I had covered Ubriaco, Skipjacks, and the black and gold from the Penguins. And then the transition happened. You were, and I went back and I looked at your bubblegum card, Tim. I did the old wiki search, and I thought I knew you well then. You know, I thought, I reach a Tim Taylor, he'll probably remember me. I mean, there were only me and Jimmy Jackson and George Taylor that were ever around the team. There weren't a lot of reporters. The TV people really didn't care much. There weren't a lot of people in the building. I had already texted Howard Scherr, still one of my best friends that I met in section 210. We sat together at every game while I covered you guys with a notebook. Yeah. I sat in the stands. And I've kept these lifelong relationships, obviously, with Trotsky, right, and some other people. And I looked at your stats, and I said, And you played here a long time. You were here all 4 years. No yeah. wonder I knew you so well, or I felt like I knew you so well. And the thing I remember about you as a player is you were the trusted guy on the ice because you did play both ends. And I don't know whether it was a blessing or a curse that you spent so much time in the minors and that the Capitals maybe never believed it. I know you have to tell me now as a grown-up like me, how did all that happen? Because you led a very, very unique career being in one place in a big city in a minor league way, and then went on to this really, you've had a glorious career as a player and as management, but I it felt for a little while like you were going to play for the Hershey Bears for 10 years or be in at that level.
Yeah, and you know what, I had a lot of growing up to do too. You know, I coming from junior hockey, I had a lot of success and was a leading goal scorer every team I played for. And then when I got to the minors, it was just a different lifestyle. You know, these guys had careers. This was their livelihood. And it actually helped me grow up a lot and realizing that after 3 years there, my fourth year, I think that's when I really started to put the off-ice workout in the summers together. And it really enhanced on the player I was supposed to be, what they drafted me to be like. So it was, you know, they drafted me as one player. And I really didn't turn out to be that player until I left the organization. But because of them, that's how I grew up and grew into the role. So, you know, as much as I was disappointed, I never got an opportunity with Washington. It all falls on me. You know, I didn't put the work in early on. And as I realized later on in my career, it probably cost me 2 years of NHL hockey if I would have put the work in. Usually 2 or 3 years is probably where you want to be in a minor league player, not four. So, again, that all fell on me. And once I figured it out, then I became an NHL player and I was able to, I think, last longer because of all those things I learned. And the longevity was because I knew what I had to do to stay in the league. And every day I did that. And unfortunately, I didn't do it early on. And that was just that was me and having to grow into that lifestyle.
That's fascinating for you to say that. I mean, first off, it's, you know, your humility was led by that. And I was talking to my wife about you. My wife and I met at an AHL hockey game in Manchester 20 years ago next month, it'll be.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, and Gabby was the coach there then at that point. But so I remember you as being one of the more grown-up kids in a way that look, there were girls, there was booze, there was the road, there was I miss home, there was I'm from a small town, there was I was a star on my junior team, or, you know, there was a whole mix. And then there were grown-ups that were just trying to get up and get time in the NHL and get a – I mean, there was a whole mix of things happening for the organization, but it was a very good Capitals team at that time. David drafted you, Poile, correct?
Yeah, David drafted me. And be quite honest, how I got out of the organization was – David had let Brian Murray go and Doug McLean, and they ended up going to Detroit. And then after my fourth year, I was unrestricted free agent. And so I actually, those guys are the ones that signed me in Detroit and gave me that opportunity. And from there, I kind of just took off. And you're right. Washington did have a good team. I remember when I was drafted, they kind of compared me a little bit to like Dale Hunter. I was supposed to come in and kind of take his job. He was early 30s. But it was funny because, you know, near the end of my career, NHL career, Dale was still playing. So there was no room there. But they were a really good team. And really, at the end of the day, it taught me how to be a better player. And really, the ebbs and flows of pro sports, it's not how fast you get knocked down. It's how quickly you can get up. And it taught me work ethic. It taught me perseverance. And I never forget this. My first time in Detroit, Scotty Bowman was our coach. And he said to me, looking around, I had won the AHL scoring championship the year prior. And I called up for one game. I scored the only goal. And so he sends me down after. And then starting next year, he says to me, he says, looking around, Stenman, right? I said, yeah. And he goes, you won the scoring championship last year. Yeah. You're MVP of the AHL. I said, yeah. He goes, looks over and he says, looks, and it's Steve Yzerman. He goes, can you beat him out? And I said, nope. He looks over, it's Igor Larionov, and he can beat him out. I said, nope. Looks over and it's Keith Primo. Can you beat him out? I said, nope. He goes, how about checking left winger? I said, perfect. That's where I'm going to start. So, and really at the end of the day, I was prepared for that because of Washington and the way they played and really growing into that role. So for the my career, I'm happy that I got to play those years. Obviously, still, when you look back, you can do things differently. I wish I would have did a couple of years earlier, but I really owed a lot to the Washington Capitals because they're the ones that really taught me how to play and taught me what it takes to be an NHL player.
Well, I did think of you as one of the grown-ups around there, and I did go back, and I remember you as a Ranger. I think I was, you know, I was somewhere where you were in a uniform, and I was covering a game or something, and I saw you later in your career. You had won one. The second one, I mean, you say you won one with those Red Wing teams in Hockey Town. You were a nice part of that package, as you just brought out with Scotty Bowman, and they were expected to win two Stanley Cups every year, you know, in that era, right? And but the Tampa thing, that's really an interesting thing because that feels like a first in thing for you at that point. And now almost two decades later, I mean, that franchise became something. And a lot of folks don't know that. They're not from Tampa. If they're not hockey people, how big the Bolts are, how big the Lightning have become there. I went down there for playoff games when Trotz was coaching the Caps number 4, 5, 6 years ago. And that team and that thing that you were a part of, I don't know that a lot of people thought the Stanley Cup was even allowed to come to Tampa, right? At that
point. You know, and when I got there, I actually was playing, I was playing with the Rangers in my second year there. Actually, my first year, John Tortorella was our coach, and he got let go with the rest of the staff, Neil Smith and John Muckler. He went to Tampa, and after my second year in New York, I got traded, and it was because of John Tortorella. He became head coach in Tampa and wanted me there as a veteran player to help out the young players. He felt they had a good young team, just want some veteran leadership there. So when I got traded there, I remember talking to him thinking, okay, I'm going to go there for a little bit and maybe, you know, get traded to another team, contending team at the deadline. I'll be a veteran player, can kind of go and maybe help someone out. And we got there, Dave Vaynerchuk and I both were there at the same time. And we kind of grew with this team and we didn't know really what it was all about. And we started to get this a persona of our team, a good young team that was heading in the right direction. And Tortorella was a demanding coach and he really thought this team should have been a lot better than it was after the first year. So heading in our second year, we were again labeled not to make the playoffs and we really put a push on and with his leadership as a coach and the leadership that we had as some veteran players, and the good young players, we kind of grew together as a team and at the same time, the fan base grew with us.
I was going to ask you that because I'm wearing a Skipjacks jersey. There aren't a whole lot of these. And those of us who were there remember it fondly and like all that. But even when I text Howard a little while ago, I'm like, it's amazing how few people were at the games. And I'm thinking what that might have done to a morale for a 19-year-old kid coming down here off the farm and finding sort of an empty big city situation, like all of that. And I would think in Tampa, from playing in the Garden, and you were all over the league for a decade at that point, Tampa, I would think, didn't have a whole lot of people. And it was lonely down there, hot outside and lonely inside, probably, right?
Yeah, you know, when I first, like the first year, it was about 14,000, 15, you know, it held 22. It was one of the bigger buildings in the league at the time. And then, you know, we started to grow, and we had some, right around January that second year, we felt we could make the playoffs. We're right in the thick of things. And we did make the playoffs. And then we ended up beating Washington in the first round of the playoffs. And it was the first time a Lightning team ever won around the playoffs. So we grew. We lost to New Jersey Devils in game 5, triple overtime. And I'll never forget, Marty St. Louis said to me, sitting in the back of the bus, he goes, that was so much fun. That, again, I bet you out of our 20 guys that played that series, there probably been maybe 3 or 4 guys that actually had playoff experience. So he was sitting back his first time. He said, that was so much fun. Now we have to play 82 games next year to get back to that level of play again. And the fan base was kind of like that too. Like, oh my God, this was fun for 5 weeks while it lasts, or 4 weeks while it lasts. I wish it would have been a little bit longer. And start of the next year, right from the get-go, we lost the Stanley Cup championship prior year, and our group felt that we're going to take another step. And we did. And again, it wasn't like we were a bad team and got hot in the playoffs. We were set. We won the Eastern Conference championship. We were the best team in the regular season Eastern Conference. We were, I think, 3 or 4 points behind Detroit Red Wings for the President's Trophy. So we had a lot of confidence going to the playoffs. And obviously, we just went run by run and won the Stanley Cup. And, you know, 22,000 people for game 7 that year. We had 22,000 people inside the building, completely sold out building. Obviously, it's game 7 Stanley Cup Finals. But throughout the whole playoffs, it was sold every game. And outside, there was 12,000 people that watched on a big screen that was on the plaza right outside the building. So it was an amazing run. Now, we don't have like the Leafs or anyone like that, like the millions of people that followed the team. But the true fans, the people that followed the team, they were all there. And it was quite an experience. And you know, to go through it with our neighbors and people that we had 2 or 3 years of living beside and our community. It was such a community-based championship. It was almost surreal. And the fans kind of grew with the team and the team grew with the fans. And the expectations were just play hard and go out and do as best you can. And every single one of our players obviously played to their capability, but it was such a great run and great ride. And we feel as an 04 team that we really kind of put a staple into the Bay Area and what hockey's all about.
Well, I mean, all these years later, the baseball team's done pretty well. They've written books about it, like all of that. And no one goes, no one cares. You know, we see that as Oriole fans here because we play down there all the time, right? Tim Taylor is here, number 25 in the program back in the day. I'm wearing my Skipjacks gear. So I was in Maine. My show was syndicated at the turn of the century, and I was on in Portland, Maine. And this is after Trotz had left and gone to Nashville. And I was at a pizza place doing like a photo op thing as a radio host. And a guy comes up to me and says, I was the equipment manager of the Maine Mariners when the team left Baltimore. And he had every jersey. And he said to me, pick whatever one you want and take it. I don't know, he might have had he had some white ones and some red ones. So I said, Steve Seftel was always a guy I liked a lot. If you have his, I'll wear his and give me the red one because I always thought they were cooler. They were the roadies at the time. And I wore Seftel's big ass jersey that hung off me because it had room for the pads. And we're friends on LinkedIn and know each other. And he's had some struggles, written a book with Dougie McLean, has helped him out tremendously as well. You both mentioned, and Doug's still in my life very much so when he's not sassing me on Canadian television. And I get texts from people about it. But I sent him that jersey about maybe a year and a half ago during the plague. I just put it in the box. I asked for his address because he had sent me his book and the jersey just arrived. And he was like, he sent me a note, like all this stuff, his family all into it. What do you remember like about the time? Because I mean, I was a kid covering you guys, whether it was Terry, Doug, Barry Trotz, Robbie hated me. That was tough time for me as the beat reporter. I was getting along better with Barry Melrose over in the Adirondack locker room and and those guys in the Bears coach time. But for you at that time, you mentioned, see, I said you were the grown-up, you were most likely to be a class leader. I always thought you were most likely to go and have a decent NHL career and be what you were to some degree. But I didn't realize, I guess, in retrospect, that 3-4 years, first year, it's, oh, you're in the minors, give it a go. Second year, it's, hey, try hard, we'll get you up. I would think by the third, fourth year, you might have, maybe your Baltimore experience isn't as romantic as I remember it.
Well, you know what? I take a lot of responsibility for that because I wasn't ready to take that next step. What it's like to be an NHL player, what you need to do every day to be an NHL player. There were times that I deserved to be called up and didn't get called up. And that put me behind the eight ball and I did not handle that the right way. I should have been more ticked off and pushed harder, but I kind of bet back. I took a step back and I was like, oh, I don't know what's going on here. I need to change. That's when I say I take responsibility for that because you have to actually show the organization that you're the player that they hoped and wanted to draft. So, and I was a high draft pick. I was second round and I felt I never got a chance there. So again, I should have handled a different way and tried to push the envelope, but I didn't. And I ran into some knee injuries, I think that third year. So I didn't play a whole bunch, but then I kind of came out of my shell in that fourth year. And I had good numbers those first 2 years, not too many guys score 25 and 30 goals those first 2 years. And I did each year. So it was a growing experience for me. And I was pretty young and my wife to this day was my girlfriend / fiance at the time. So I missed being at home and not to discredit Baltimore, but you're right. There was no one in the stands. Like I went from junior hockey where we had 8,000 people every night and it was packed on a Friday to a stage that was in a building. I never really played with a stage in a building before. And to have 2,000, 3,000, it was a lot different and being 9 hours away from home. So it was a lot of growing up for me. And again, it really helped me with my longevity in the NHL. I might say if I would have made it a year or two earlier, maybe I don't play till I was actually 38 years old when I retired. So maybe I don't play to that. Maybe I play to 34 and 35 and miss an opportunity with Tampa Bay to win another Stanley Cup. So, at the end of the day, it all worked out. It made me grow up a lot and understand what it takes. And really now I started with my career now with St. Louis as development player person or player development. So now I was passing on to young guys, trying to be a mentor to those young players and to show them that you don't need to play 4 years. It should be 2/3 years maybe at the most, and give them my experience and why I wasn't ready for the NHL, why, what stuff they need to do to get ready to play in the NHL at an earlier age. So it was all worked out for me. It was fate. And, you know, I'm just fortunate enough that I was able to last as long as I had and play with some really good teams.
You see yourself in a lot of these kids, huh?
I do, you know, and that's where, you know, with we had actually today, I was just dealing with a player that got cut from Team Canada, and he's a real good player. He's like third in scoring in the Quebec League, but he didn't have a good summer evaluation camp with him. So it was heading into this camp, getting ready for World Junior. They already had this in the back of mind that he wasn't very good in the summer, and it probably cost him an opportunity of playing. So that's the stuff that I remind these guys. Like, and again, I went through 3-4 years of that in Baltimore. Once I showed that I was ready, committed to do it, I made it. But those first couple of years with the lack of preparation in the summer, which cost me, and which also gave them bad vibes too towards me. So carrying that over my career and what things that I missed early on, I'm really trying to help only these guys. So it's been a good relationship between myself and these good young players, because I can help them move on, make that transition easier.
Boy, St. Louis and Baltimore got a lot in common as a guy that spent a little bit of time. You got great frozen custard out there. Go to Pappy's, go to Ted Drew's, do all that good stuff. But playing hockey out there, right? I mean, they a long time back to the Checker Dome, all that to try to win. You did plug the Stanley Cup. And, I mean, you work for an organization as well that has always never had bad days, it feels to me. It's always been sort of plus, but could never get a cup, even bringing Gretzky in 25-30 years ago, right?
Yeah, that's funny, because I played that year. We beat them in game 7 in round 2 at that time. That's when they traded for Gretzky to St. Louis. I was in Detroit at the time. That was one of the most memorable games I've ever played in, you know, in double overtime to win 1-0 in game 7. That's the year when Detroit was set the NHL record too for 62 wins. So playing against Gretzky every single night. And then as I got to be a player, you know, with other teams, when I went to Boston, I became that checking line center. So I got to play against the best players every single night. So playing against a guy like your idol, like Wayne Gretzky, was a lot of fun and almost too
especially
much.
When he was old, though, right? Like, that was more fun for you.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it didn't take much.
You don't want to see him in the Oilers jersey out there with this guy.
Yeah,
right?
That would have been a different story, that's for sure. So,
well, tell me about your gig now. Tell everybody what you do, and what does a current modern day I got your title right here, Director of Player Development. What are you developing?
Well, no, you know what? That was my old title as Director of Player Development. Now I'm Director of Player Personnel, so I'm running the Hockey Operations Department. So my job really is to make sure that I go out and watch all the NHL games I can. So if we want to make a trade, then I know every single player, the ins and outs, and watch their American League team too. So knowing the whole league inside and out and players, as well as making sure our AHL team is run smoothly, making sure players are playing well. And I'm also in charge of all our young players. I've hired a couple of Glenn Wesley, a defenseman, played 1,600, 1,500 games in NHL. Chris Thorburn, ex-player. So they're on our development side that I hired to do the development side to look after young players. But I'm kind of in charge of that department too. So I'm really enjoying it. I love going to games. I was in Tampa this past week for 4 days. Got to see, one of my best friends with Dave Anderchuk. I see Marty St. Louis when Montreal's playing. I see Vinny LeCavalier on the road a lot. So I get to see all these players with Steve Yzerman, guys I played with and against. I see them on the road doing the same jobs that I'm doing. So it's a lot of fun to still be involved in the game, except for that physical presence that you have to be, right? Getting ready all summer and being ready for it physically. So I don't have to do that anymore, which is nice. But I do get to see all the guys I played and go in the old buildings and seeing the people that work the dress rooms and work the around the building, get to see them too and say hi to them. So it's a opportunity for me to stay in the game and really see the best players still playing. So it's a lot of fun. I really, really enjoy it.
The good old hockey game, the best game you can name. So, hey, man, I appreciate you spending a little time and bringing your humility here. I learned a lot about you in the last 25, 30 minutes, Tim Taylor. And it all happened because Josh Rimmer saw your picture on the interweb. You recognize that kid there, huh?
I do, yeah. That's many years ago. But so now I'm a grandfather. So it's times have changed.
Oh, man. Well, you know, Trotz is enjoying this sort of weird first time in 40 years where he's just sitting around like edging to get back in.
That's
and he
not
going
to last too long for him. Tell him not to get used to that, because there's going to be a lot of teams coming for him.
I think he realizes that. I think he's taking a breath in at this point. And he said, tell T-Bone I said hello. So there you have it. All right.
All right. Well, I get to see him a little bit when the draft was going on. So it's always nice to catch up.
Well, nothing like old friends. And I appreciate 30 years later, you picking up the phone and remembering the young little reporter with the notebook in the corner writing about things. And I said to my wife, you were always a guy that whether the team won or lost, I could come over to your locker and ask you anything. And you wouldn't be able to tell from talking to you. And you're still this way. You're all like, you have a business about you that I remember when you were a kid that if, hey man, we lost 6-2, tough night against Rochester, whatever. Taylor's a guy I can go over and talk to, you know, not going to chop my head off. So yeah, I always thought of you as the mature one. So
yeah, I remember I went there when I was 19, turning 20 years old, and I left when I was 23. So I still was a young kid, had a lot of growing up to do, that's for sure.
Well, hey, man, I'm glad you did your growing up, and congrats on all your success. Thanks for the time, and I'm going to be pulling for the Blues now that I know you're involved.
All right, Nestor, we need you pulling for us. We haven't had very many good games this year.
Bro, invite me out for some Ted Drews. I'm there now, you know, right? Come on.
We will.
On frozen ice and some frozen custard. Tim Taylor, one-time second-round draft pick of the Washington Capitals and a four-year skipjack during – my era, the Kenny Albert era, the Barry Trotz era, the Doug McClain era of I'll start singing the song when you Baltimore skipjacks. I'll be doing that one all night. Fight, fight, fight. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Catching up with old friends, talking about hockey, talking BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.